Studio 360.
Hey, everybody. I'm Hari Kundabolu, filling in this week for Kurt Anderson. So I'm a stand-up comedian, and my favorite special from last year was by far Hannah Gatsby's Nanette on Netflix.
The pride flag. Now, I love what it means. That is perfect. Pride. Wonderful. But the flag itself, a bit busy.
Nanette starts out like a very conventional stand-up special. There's just lots of great jokes.
It's just six very shouty, assertive colours stacked on top of each other. No rest for the eye. An afternoon of that waving in my face, I need to express my identity through the metaphor of a nap.
And then over the course of the hour, it gets a lot more confrontational. It gets more serious. There's lots of twists and turns. It gets gut-wrenching. Because she's talking about serious stuff. She's talking about trauma, violence, homophobia, and the nature of comedy itself.
Do you understand what self-deprecation means when it comes from somebody who already exists in the margins? It's not humility. It's humiliation. I put myself down in order to speak, in order to seek permission to speak. And I simply will not do that anymore, not to myself or anybody who identifies with me.
I thought Nanette was incredibly funny and poignant and smart. It deconstructed the form. It was able to challenge people's notion of what stand-up is supposed to be. Her new show, Douglas, is just as good. The big difference is that there are a ton more jokes. And it's also powerful because she's talking about her diagnosis with autism. Before last summer, very few people in the U.S. had ever heard of Hannah Gatsby. But she didn't come out of nowhere. Well, I mean, she kind of comes out of nowhere. I mean, she's from Tasmania. But she was well-known in, like, comedy circles in the U.K. and Australia before she even wrote Nanette. She'd been performing hour-long shows for over a decade in festivals in Melbourne and Edinburgh.
Well, every year I'd write a new show. So my first show was my coming out story, which is Kiss Me Quick, I'm Full of Jubes, which is a candy in Australia.
And it was like my hormones played a cruel joke on me. They said, let's make this one into the ultimate baby-carrying vessel. And then give her absolutely no fucking desire to make one. I'm like a transformer that doesn't fancy driving.
And then my next show was called The Cliff Young Shuffle, which was a long-form piece about walking. I walked across England while coming off antidepressants.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I've never done normal shows, have I?
I had to go and see a podiatrist. He openly laughed at my feet. And I said, well, I'm glad you went into podiatry, not gynecology.
I could never have written Nanette without those 10 years of... The shows beforehand, you know, were the sort of the building blocks that led to that.
What was your life like before Nanette?
So quiet.
Were you in Tasmania?
I live in Melbourne now.
Yeah.
Living in a little rental. I didn't believe I'd ever be able to afford a home of my own. So I decided about a year before I wrote Nanette, I really want a garden. I'm just going to plant out this rental. And so before Nanette, really, it was dogs and gardening and tea and a lot of alone time. I spent a lot of time alone. I think I was exhausted. I'd been diagnosed with autism, so I was adjusting to that new sort of framework of understanding myself. Of course, diagnosis doesn't come with a change. You just have it.
That happened before Nanette was released.
Oh, yeah. Oh, before it was written. I mean, Nanette was pretty much the show I could write once I understood what was setting me apart, because I was always very confused. I was like, I just felt like there was something really deeply wrong with me. So I was always just scrambling to get to the starting line of normal. And then once I was diagnosed, I'm like, oh, I'm never going to get there. You know, there's a brain situation. So I began to look at myself with a lot more empathy, because all my work prior to that was going, I'm sorting out what's wrong with me. Whereas then I'm like, oh, I know what's wrong with me. I know my limits. But then I turn my critical eye onto the world. And I'm going, I can also see your limits.
There is too much hysteria around gender from you gender normals. You're the weirdos. You're a bit f***ing hysterical. You're a bit weird. You're a bit uptight. You need to get a grip. You know, you gender normals. Seriously, calm down, gender normals. Get a grip. No, I mean in a dress. That's f***ing weird. No, it's not. Do you know what's weird? Pink headbands on bald babies.
But then it's also interesting to me that just the weird breadth of demographic that really loved Nanette.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, really kind of great to know that, like, when you think of all the things that I tick off as an individual as being in the margins, you know, apart from being white, which then I'm in the center of privilege right there.
Right, right.
Which is, I think, what let me get away with it. Like, if I was an autistic, queer, not traditionally good-looking, overweight, indigenous woman.
Right.
Nanette wouldn't have happened.
Man, Nanette really touched people. I don't think I realized the extent of it at first. I mean, all my friends were talking about Nanette. It was popping up on Facebook constantly. But it was only when I saw you on stage presenting at the Emmys when I realized how huge you'd become.
Nobody knows what jokes are, especially not men. am I right, fellas? That's why I'm presenting alone.
And this is the point where I can't, because I literally have come from nowhere in this circle, like, you know, the Hollywood situation. But all of a sudden, I'm an alien in that world, but people know who I am, and it's weird. Like, people I have seen on TV and only associate as, like, I went to this party for Netflix and there were people there. So you're moving around just going, gosh, there's Jodie Foster, g'day. Oh, John Stamos, g'day. And then they're coming up to me. So I'm forgetting and they've seen Nanette and they want to talk to me. And that is a really trippy experience. Like John Stamos.
Yeah.
I mean, anyway.
Uncle Jesse.
Yeah, fan of Nanette. You would not, that's what I mean.
Like, John Stamos is a fan of Nanette.
Seen it twice, that's what he told me. But, you know, people lie. But I want to believe Uncle Jesse. But, you know, after recent events, can we trust Fuller House? So that's sort of this weird moment. Because I'm used to being in a crowd. I can be invisible and I just watch the world go by and I'm very happy with that.
Yeah.
But then these people are coming up to me and I'm like, g'day.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is also good because they get to lead the conversation and then and then I just say, I am also a fan of your work.
Right.
Like a robot. And then, so that's already quite a lot to take in. And then this woman taps me on the shoulder and says, Jennifer Aniston would like to meet you. And I'm like, oh, and I look around for her. She's not there because I'm being summoned. So I'm like, well, okay, sure. And then all the way through this party, like I'm following this woman weaving through the crowd and I'm like, this is weird. And it was also weird because it was outdoors and it had white carpet on the outdoors of the land. And I'm like, decisions. There's bold decisions and also why decisions. But anyway, so we get there and I'm introduced and she's delighted to see me and I'm delighted to see that her hair is as good as everyone says. It's not all Photoshop. And so she's like, she goes in for a hug. Who am I to refuse? And then she said, oh, I'm so excited to meet you. I just have to tell you, I have not seen Nanette.
It was based on hype alone.
The hype alone. Jennifer Aniston wanted to meet me because other people had told her. And then I've just sort of very bluntly replied, why did you tell me that?
You said that?
Yeah. I have autism.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Bye. For a moment she seemed slightly thrown by that. Because she's like, I'm Jennifer Aniston, that's why I tell you that. And then I think she heard herself and then laughed. Like, it was a lovely, genuine moment. Which is like, I just wanted, you know,
to connect to you in
to
some
connect
way.
To you. I've heard such great things. I haven't been able to watch it because I've been filming. And I think ultimately, as weird and funny as that interaction is, it's also kind of a, you know, she lives a weird life.
Yeah.
And she's probably going, I don't know what goes through other people's head. I have autism. But it was a strange little situation, wasn't it? I liked it. Ultimately, I think that was a good interaction.
Oh, that's a great interaction.
Part of me goes, good on you. Don't know what motivates you. But cool.
And by the time I identified as being gay, it was too late. I was already homophobic. And you do not get to just flick a switch on that. No, what you do is you internalise that homophobia and you learn to hate yourself. Hate yourself to the core.
I mean, you got so much love for Nanette, but there was a really loud backlash from mostly dudes complaining that it doesn't count as comedy. There aren't enough jokes. Comedy isn't supposed to be this serious. It's supposed to make you laugh. Like, how do you respond to that?
I think if the only reason you speak is to make people laugh.
Yeah.
What are you saying?
Right. And we hear it from our peers, too. Look, I want to be able to destroy in every room. I want to make people laugh in every room.
But if you want to then build an hour-long show that you want, you know, over an hour, that you want people to sit down and watch, it's very arrogant to think that, you know, just destroying every room you walk in is going to be enough for people who are not in a room with you. It's a different form because people get bored laughing, believe it or not. Mm. You can be wall-to-wall funny for 70 minutes and they either get bored or mindless.
Mm. They don't remember a thing that was said.
And that's also fine. But these arguments about, you know, this is not what comedy is. What comedy was invented so recently, it's a literal joke. You know, like...
You mean the form of stand-up that way?
Yeah, like, it hasn't been around long enough to be getting this high and mighty about something you've just made up.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's a made-up... Like all art, eventually, you know, if you dig deep enough, it is made up.
Shaped by where it was performed, the context it was performed in.
Well, I mean, if you look way back before even the written word, you have oral storytelling. That is how culture was passed through. And that was something that women participated in. And then historically, women have been squeezed out the sharing of stories and the writing of stories, you know, through not being able to access education, public spaces, et cetera, et cetera. So really, stand-up comedy is the logical conclusion of centuries of, you know, men writing their own rules for themselves, which is fine. Good on you, fellas. But you made a mistake by letting women be educated, and now we are. So back off.
Right. I mean, because the accusation's already been made, like, oh, you killed comedy. You're killing comedy.
But if one person can kill comedy, comedy can't be that robust. It's in an iron lung anyway.
Right.
I just pulled the plug.
And comedy, first of all, there must be some evolutionary benefit, because why else are we still laughing? Like, clearly there is something. You cannot kill that art form.
Well, you can, because people are okay at making themselves laugh. They don't actually need to outsource. Particularly now, like, friends and family make you laugh more than any comedian ever will.
That's right.
Absolutely. Unless you're lonely, which a lot of comics are, speaking from experience. But it's also, like, people are able to make themselves laugh in their own circles quite easily. And particularly now with the internet, you can have access to laughs anytime you want.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go, I need a laugh. You look on YouTube, whatever floats your boat. You can find that laughter there. So I think the live art form has to evolve because the world has what it needs at its fingertips. If you want to take comedy seriously, then you have to, you know, it has to move into a more mature form. Otherwise, just do fart jokes against a brick wall.
And there's nothing wrong with that if
Absolutely
that's what you
not.
Do.
No.
In Annette, you talk about leaving comedy altogether.
I do think I have to quit comedy, though. And seriously, and it's probably not the forum to make such an announcement, is it? in the middle of a comedy show. But I have been questioning, you know, this whole comedy thing. I don't feel very comfortable in it anymore. You know, for the past year I've been questioning it and reassessing. And I think it's healthy for an adult human to take stock, pause and reassess. And when I first started doing the comedy over a decade ago, my favourite comedian was Bill Cosby. There you go. It's very healthy to reassess, isn't it?
If Nanette had not hit the way it hit and became this global sensation, would you have quit comedy altogether?
I would have quit the cycle that I was on, which is writing a new show every year. Once I was diagnosed with autism, I understood the lifestyle I was leading was incredibly distressing. Mm. So I'd spend 3 or 4 months really in a catatonic state, which is after the Edinburgh Festival generally. And so then I'd have to write a new show. And I believe that was shortening my life. But also I'm approaching it, you know, what I do next in the same way that I approach Nanette, which is like, I need to not care if this fails. I need to know that I'm happy. And I am. I know that I'm happy. Like, if this all goes away tomorrow, I just go back and live with my dogs and nurture a garden and probably get a few shifts at my brother's fruit and vegetable shop. And you know what? Like, I am that simple in my needs. I would be fine.
When you got diagnosed with autism, was that part of you that, you know, there's that performer part, every experience, every piece of pain, you recycle it and you try to turn it into something funny or, you know, was there a part of you that had the instinct, this happened, what do I do with it?
I had a fairly good instinct to keep it to myself because I had put most things out into the world quite like, well, that's something I can wrangle into a show. But this cut right very much to the center of my identity. This is my brain. This is the way that I think. I know, like, you just know the way people view autism is not great. It's not an empowered platform. So I knew to keep it to myself. And then, but what I did with Nanette was a show about autism ultimately. It's like, look how my brain thinks. It's constructive. I see things that people don't. I don't see a lot of things that most people do.
In your new show, Douglas, you talk about your diagnosis really like directly and powerfully. For people who know you from Nanette, when they see Douglas, what are they getting?
They're getting, well, first of all, they're getting a performer who's not, you know, frightened. You know, every time I stood on stage to perform Nanette, I was, you know, I knew what was coming. So there's a, you know, I was carrying a lot and it was never easy to perform. With Douglas, it's a fun show. Like, it is a playful, silly, it's showing another facet of who I am.
There are so many jokes.
It's a really joke-heavy show.
I mean, that does respond to like, oh, she doesn't have jokes. I'm like, oh, no, no. What do you think they're going to criticize you about now since you've proven you're funny and you have even more jokes in this hour?
Oh, that's why I'm doing it. I'm fascinated. They will have something to say and I need to know what it is.
So you're trolling them.
Hate baiting.
Yes.
I call it what it is in the show. I'm deliberately hate baiting.
Wow.
Yeah, sort of like I take a poignant moment and then I sort of destroy it.
That's the most talented trolling I could have possibly imagined.
If you've got a platform, what are you going to do? You guys are going to do good or you're going to troll trolls?
Right.
I've already done good.
Yes.
So why not troll trolls?
Can you tell me about your dad's scrapbook?
Oh, Dad has been collecting, you know, reviews and articles since I first started doing comedy. And he's less nostalgic than more of an archivist. So he's like, here's the thing, the Google alert said that you've been mentioned. And so it's the good, bad, and ugly. Before I wrote Nanette, there was two spiral bound. He went to Staples, it's Office Works in Australia, but I'm trying, Staples, and got them bound, spiral bound. You know, so he'd been printing them off. And so he's got these two spiral bound things. And at Christmas before Nanette, he said, it's starting to get a bit same-same, so I'm going to stop. So she said, there's your two scrapbooks there. And it had, like, on the front, my comedy career with, like, Microsoft Word graphics and, like, 3D off. Like, it's so cute. And then, of course, I wrote Nanette, and then halfway through the year, he's like, well, I've had to start a new spiral bound. And he was really ill. He was melanoma, being treated for melanoma through all this. So it was kind of, like, a really great way for me to be in his life. You know, because there's not much you can do while someone's in treatment. You know, like for me to go, oh, I'm going to cancel my New York season and go home and be with my dad is just like, that's a lot. So that was a really wonderful way, you know, for me to still be like actively connected to my dad during that whole thing because he's like, you know, Google alert on me. And of course, there was so much press.
Right.
So much press. So he said to me, he said, you know, when you're in Edinburgh, I could just take the ads out and you could print it out on an A4 piece of paper, fine, but this New York Times review went for pages. I'm not made of toner.
The New York Times should know that.
Yep.
They should restrict how much they write.
Watch your word count. My dad's not made of toner.
Hannah, thank you for doing this.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
Hannah Gatsby's new show is called Douglas. She's currently in the middle of a world tour. By the way, a few days after we talked, Hannah won an Emmy for her writing on Nanette.